I've had a lot of time, maybe too much time, to think about how I perceive the world, the parts of the world that I am attracted to or makes me not want to interact with it, and where I can, figuring out how I could have more of the first and less of the second. It's difficult nailing down exactly what, in my perception, is causing this. And so I'm just going to put it all under what I'm going to call comforting spaces. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Jeff Atwood, Daniel Boyd, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Nothing has paid more dividends in my life than shooting the BBS documentary. From meeting heroes to engaging with folks I wouldn't have ever engaged with in places all around the country, and having a reason to travel all over with a sense of purpose instead of an aimless desire to be somewhere else. It's been nothing but a layer of joy and delight looking back. Even the research part of the whole process was important and vital because it allowed me to drill down into an entire body of knowledge where I felt I was one of the first people collating it all and putting it together for others. The BBS History Collection on the BBS Documentary site, along with the BBS Software Collection, are the result of years of phone calls, reaching out, and collaborations. They represent for me a dawning in knowing where my skills were and where they could be applied later. When I face down some sort of weird technical problem with VHS tape, coming up with classifications for the archive, for the many strange and myriad things that people feel they have to upload to the Internet Archive, all of this stems from those very, very complicated and packed years. And one of those things I discovered was that as I traveled all over the country, taking flights, driving for hundreds of miles, visiting various homes, and then finding myself in towns, it was a way for me to realize my own preferences in living, working, and maybe just existing spaces. Not just places at home that I built by myself using things I'd gathered, but places that were open to others that made me feel welcome or had a feeling or aesthetic that I brought home with me, thought about, and integrated into what I do. There were moments of pure desolation when I was working on the documentary. There was one moment when I was traveling between Denver and Salt Lake City through Wyoming, where I pulled the car over just to realize how isolated I was, how there was nothing on the radio, and it was cold. And if this rental car that I had died out, I would have been in some major trouble. I probably wouldn't have had the energy to sustain against the cold wind, waiting and hoping that I would get the attention of one of the trucks passing by. Meanwhile, I think of Jim Willing, who lived in the Northwest and had created the fourth BBS ever created, who then had a dream, which was to open a bowling alley. And the bowling alley he found that was available and for sale was in Kansas. And he went to a little town called Yates Center, Kansas, and I followed him to be able to interview him for my movie. So, I came to a town that had long ago seen its best days, where almost every other store was closed or boarded up or nearly empty, and then waiting for Jim to come to his bowling alley, where the Yates Center Bowl could open. We went in, and it was interesting to me. It had a sense built into it of Jim's handcrafting everywhere. There was a place to sell concessions that was a counter aimed where he could also sit in his office or run the cash register or provide shoes. And when we came in, he told me the heat wasn't working and he needed a moment, and he went down to do whatever spells he was doing down there before we set up for his interview. I was so emotionally taken by the love and effort that had been put into this bowling alley that I made sure that when I interviewed him, the bowling alley was clearly visible behind him. The documentary was not just about capturing the story of the BBS, but capturing the context of people and their computers and their work environment at the time that I was filming. I wanted it clear that these people were builders, people who created shrines, senses of self in piles of objects, rooms that were filled to the brim with things they'd collected that they had found interesting. And I wanted to ensure that they were able to be seen in times hence. The interview with Jim went great. He had a pretty strong sense of his own history, the tape filled with lots of memories and answers and thoughts about his first few days of finding out that bulletin board systems were a thing and writing to Ward and Randy for copies of CBBS. The fact that he named his BBS CBBS Northwest because it was the only bulletin board in that quadrant of the U.S. And as an extra bonus, he had the hardware in the bowling alley, stored away, which I filmed with him turning it on, describing the various parts, and capturing what I thought would have been long ago discarded equipment. Most of this bowling alley was set up for warmth, for people to arrive, interact, bowl, and socialize before heading back into the remnants of the surrounding area. In fact, after we finished the interview, I hung around a bit, and kids started coming in. It was very interesting to me in my 30s to see how teenagers treated this space. For them, this was normal. You would meet down at this bowling alley, hang out in the lobby area, and then prepare to bowl, reconnecting with your friends from distant areas who you otherwise would only see in school, and just being loud rabble-rousers talking about what they did. In fact, as I watched them, I remembered this one theater in my own high school years. It was located in Carmel, New York, which was a haul from Chappaqua, New York. You were talking about barreling through the night, getting off the highway, going through a bunch of roads, and then ending up in a rundown shopping plaza where everything else was closed except for a theater in the corner. And in that theater in the corner, around midnight when we would be there, we would watch the Rocky Horror Picture Show. The theater was completely closed except for this one movie being shown. The old man who ran the theater clearly didn't enjoy his Fridays, including a shift past midnight. But he'd take our money, we would go down, and we would have a fantastic time till 1:30 in the morning, calling out all the lines, dancing down at the bottom of the theater. And in that moment, in those places, it was just a box surrounded by fabric with a big screen playing a damaged, spliced version of a Hollywood movie from decades before. All of those different tattered pieces coming together to make a place that I felt warm and enjoyed so much, the freedom that was functionally in there. As I traveled from state to state in the documentary, I would find other places like Jim Willing's bowling alley, like that theater from my youth, places where somebody had a dream, made a business, or made some sort of entity where people would meet, people who had similar interests or even conflicting interests, but a shared vision for where they could have those interests. And they would build for themselves a beautiful and most interesting location. Running through a lot of my memories is how easily one could just take a bunch of wood, of padding, of fabric, of plastic, and make from it something that felt otherworldly. I see a lot of it when people build vans or living spaces on wheels where even though it's a metal box, something about the way they put everything together, the different little ship cabinets and collapsible pieces, means you sense that there's a bigger destiny, a larger purpose to the thing that you're in. I couldn't begin to count how many of these places I've been in. Photon, quirky movie theaters, LAN and copy parties, demo scene parties, hacker conferences, overly decorated hotel rooms with snacks and computers and tools and toys and people filled to the brim with folks having a great time. But with the perspective of years hence, where I've built a small office filled with colored lights and shelves up to the ceiling, providing an image on Twitch and streaming that makes a lot of people say, "Where is that? Where can I go to be with that? Where can I go to be part of that?" It tells me that these lessons, gathered as they've been, haphazardly as they are, have been one of the best lessons I've ever learned. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bekoyanu, Mark Pilgrim, Ernie Hershey, Michael Rubin, Craig Talbert, Dileep Reddy, Sean Kelly, Trixie the Cat, Sembiance, and Anonymous, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere, who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. I'm recording this podcast inside of a mailbox-shaped sound baffler called an Isovox. I am in complete or near-complete darkness. I'm talking to a microphone that's in front of me with a pop shield, and I can't see or refer to anything. There's humming in the background from my computers that I filter out when I finally edit the podcast. And from all this, from this weird, short, bizarre box that I stand inside, I dream a thousand dreams, and I share them with you. This might be one of the best spaces that I've ever been in.